It's time for Mac Geek Gab, and listener Adam, hey, that's me, brings us our quick tip of the week with, hey, looking for something on a specific website and having a hard time finding it using that website's search feature? Well, you can do this trick in Google search or in Safari if you use Google there. If you start your search term in the search term box or the URL bar with site, S-I-T-E, colon, and then the domain of the website. So for Mac Geek Gab, www.macgeekgab.com, and then a space and do your search. Google will search that site specifically. It's great for Googling specific sites to find what you want. More tips like this, plus your questions answered today on Mac Geek Gab 1068 for Monday, December 16th, 2024.
Welcome to Mac Geek Gab, the show where we share quick tips like that from us and from you. We share cool stuff found from us and from you. We share your questions and ours sometimes, and hopefully some answers to go along with those. Sponsors for this episode include, three of our CES 2025 sponsors, which include CCC Backup from Bombic, the Omni Group, and everything they make. And private internet access, and we'll talk a little bit more about PIA in a minute, but you can save 83% off your VPN service plus 4 free months at PIAVPN.com/MGG. So we will talk about all of those, and hopefully next week we will have all the paperwork in place to tell you about the final two, rounding out the total five CES sponsors that we have. So yes, all coming together very quickly here. So... here in Durham, New Hampshire, on National Chocolate Covered Anything Day, I'm Dave Hamilton.
Anything, Dave?
Anything, Adam.
Oh, boy. Well,
I here in South Dakota am Adam Christensen.
And here also in New Hampshire, it's Pilot Pete. Great to be with you, gents. On 1068, the police code is a telephone call for help. Sadly, I know that one all too well this
morning. You're laughing.
You cover in chocolate.
You're laughing because all turned out to be well this morning, Pete.
Yeah, I did indeed laugh when it turned out to be well. I was not happy when I had to make the call, but I explained it pre-show. I was trying to get my daughter a wake-up call, and it got bad.
Being a dad is a job that that knows no bounds. Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
yeah.
And that's a good thing. I
it is
true. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. But oh man, is it frustrating sometimes?
oh yeah, for sure.
Have kids, they said it'll be rewarding. They said. Mm-hmm. When does that happen? When's the reward?
Yeah.
Asking for a friend.
I don't know. I've had a lot of rewards for being a dad over the years. So
fair enough.
Yeah.
There might be a whole new spinoff show. Dad
Geek Gab. Uh-oh. Now we can have another domain we need to register here. Speaking of, I need to get that other one from you. Anyway. Okay.
We got some tips? See.
We do. I had a conversation going with listener John, and it was actually a fist shake of his where he was shaking his fist because Apple's update lists in their app stores, iOS App Store, Mac App Store, iPad App Store, of course, are never up to date when you launch them, or rarely up to date.
Right.
And if they are, it's only because nothing new has come out since the last time it did its automatic check. But when you go into the update section of the Mac App Store or the iPhone App Store, what you see as the list there has not been refreshed just because you launched the page. And he was shaking his fist about this. I'm like, well, you're correct. However, there's a quick tip here, because the tip is knowing that they are not auto refresh just because you launched the page. And on iPhone or iPad, once you get to the update list, you pull the screen down and to trigger a refresh, and that will refresh that list. And for me, it often doubles the number of app updates I have. And then on the Mac, if you go to the update section of the Mac App Store, the trick is to remember it's a web view. And so just hit Command R and it will refresh everything on that page, which is your updates page. And again, often I wind up seeing my number double when I go in there. So that's the tip. And thank you, John, for shaking your fist about it and making me realize that we should share this with everybody. Everybody should know, even though it's I agree with the fist shake. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to take any wind out of those sails. When I launch that page, it should give me the current version of that page, but it doesn't. So.
Right.
Yeah, there's new iWork updates out as of yesterday.
Oh, yep. See, I didn't even see them yet because I haven't launched that page and hit Command R. I'm not.
I don't know
what
to call those things collectively in modern times, so I'll just use the old term.
Is it
keynote numbers and pages were all updated
but
yesterday?
I think
apparently,
if you go to apple.com/iWork, it
still works.
Yeah,
they're still collectively called that.
They are still collectively called that. Yes. Yes.
Those things are timeless.
Who knew?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
I learned something.
You see?
There you go.
We had two bells going at the same time. All right.
Great minds think alike, Dave.
and then there's us.
Yeah. That hurt. Oh, you cut me to the core.
Well, I joined you, though, at your core.
Good, so. Fair enough. All
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. So let me take us to Tony. Tony writes, and he says, I listen in Anderson, South Carolina. I found the show after Adam stopped his show and joined y'all. I have loved listening ever since. Most people love the rumors and news and debates after keynotes. I love listening to the little tips and the minute details of how to do this or that. So thank you for the show.
Woo-hoo!
He also mentions that he saves the boring shows for when he's at work and listens to us when he drives to and from lunch and at lunch. He says, I can... Kudos to you, Tony, on this one. He says, I can listen at 1.5 and sometimes 1.75 speed and can hear the whole show during my lunch break. Man, if you can take this show in at 1.5 to 1.75, I have a hard time taking it in at 1.0 and I'm doing the show.
Dude, when I meet people and they say, oh, yeah, I have to get used to how slow you actually talk. I'm like, dude, I talk way too fast. So, yeah,
right.
I don't understand. But, yes, more power to you. I think
yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. Exactly. So he wrote in and talked about making booklets last week. And there was actually a couple people that came in and someone backed up Adam's recommendation about the booklet app. I won't go into that. He had a second tip in the end that was actually a PS, which I think is a great quick tip and why I prepped it for the show. He says, I guess I have another tip. I've sent a couple in, but this isn't something y'all probably don't know, but perhaps some listeners just have never thought of it. Mea culpa. I had not thought of it. Thank you, Tony. I incorporated it right into my workflow, and this is what it is. You don't have to open shortcuts to run a shortcut. In shortcuts, open or edit your shortcut, and then click the little discrete eye in the circle, the info icon, and then add a keyboard shortcut. So, for instance, when we do show prep, one of the things we do is we have a shortcut that copies your email and puts it into notes, and including our response, and puts the title up, and it makes it so we can all sort it. And then, for instance, Dave has a dash, mine's an equal sign, Adam is an at sign, and that tells us who prepped it, who's going to read it on the show, all that sort of stuff. I changed that shortcut to Command Equal because equals my sign for the note. And when I do that, it runs the shortcut. It puts the note in and bang, zoom, done. I don't have to open shortcuts, search for the tile, click on it.
Yeah.
Just calls it right up.
Brilliant.
Thank you, Tony.
I did not know this until this very moment because I had little time to prep the show this week. And so I just was like, well, that sounds like an interesting thing. I'll let Pete take it from there. And I didn't read the tip until just now. I went and created Keyboard Maestro actions for macros for every one of my shortcuts that I wanted to trigger with a keystroke, and I have it do it because I wasn't smart enough to think that maybe shortcuts had that functionality.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Well, yeah. But I've been using Camille all week. Thank you, Tony. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Works great. Lasts amazing. A long time.
Yeah. Amazing. Love it.
So, yeah.
All right. Okay. Bill has a, well, a new way of putting the contents of a screenshot on the clipboard. He says, I watched a Mac Most video about screenshots, and in the past, if I wanted to save a screenshot directly to the clipboard, I'd change the destination in the options setting after opening the screenshot app. He says, I use Command-Shift-5 because it presents all the possibilities and is easier to remember than Command-Shift-3 or Command-Shift-4. Okay, great. However, now I know that I can leave the destination at the default desktop and still have a screenshot go directly to the clipboard. Here's how. Once you've selected the area that you want to capture, simply hit Command-C, your everyday copy command. Voila! Your screenshot is now on the clipboard and not your desktop or any other default destination. I love that. Thank you, Bill. That's outstanding.
Hmm.
I know. I had no idea. This is what we love. It 1,067 and change episodes, and there's still things to learn. Like, I know we repeat quick tips because we've forgotten them, that we've done them in the past. That certainly happens. Mea culpa. But I'm pretty sure this one's new. So. Seems obvious.
So I had to look this up because I thought this was the case. So that tip I did not know, using Command-C when you were, you know, doing the screenshot thing. Yeah. But I believe, and I just confirmed, at least Google's confirming it with me, that if you also add the control key while doing Shift-Command-4 or Shift-Command-3, that automatically moves it, sets it to the clipboard.
You are correct. Yes. His is about doing it with Command-Shift-5, which is the correct new functionality. But you're right. You're absolutely right. It Command-Shift-4 saves it. Command-Control-Shift-4 puts it on the clipboard.
Puts it on the clipboard.
And the same with 3. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, love it.
Oh, very cool.
Love it. We talked in 1067 about updating your iPhone, Pete, with by connecting it to your Mac.
Right.
R. Stanley says, I used my Mac last week along with Apple Configurator to update a 32-gig iPad to iPad OS 18. There wasn't enough free space on my iPad to be able to do it on the device, but by using the Mac and the Configurator software, I was able to do so without the effort of deleting gigabytes of messages and other apps. Love that. Thank you for sharing that. That's it. I love this stuff. And then Andrew takes it a step farther. He says, iPads and iPhones are not the only Apple devices that you can use to do this. You can plug HomePods and HomePod minis into your Mac to restore them. When you do, they start glowing amber. How do I know? A few years ago, my ISP sent me a new modem/router that quickly turned into a cage match between their crap box and my flotilla of HomePods. In the end, I had to reset all of them, and I learned you do this by plugging them into your Mac, and I think doing it all through the Finder rather than iTunes like we used to do it. It worked, and I got my flotilla back out to sea, tossed the ISP modem router, and bought Orbeez, which work just fine. Awesome. Glad to hear it, Andrew. I like the idea of a flotilla of HomePods.
Nice.
Yeah, that's the new term I'm going to use for the Sonos devices I have in the house. The flotilla of Sonos devices. It's too many. Sonos has got to clean their act up, though. I'll fish shake a little bit here. Well, no, I am very much a Sonos household. True. And have been for a long time. And there's momentum to that, right? It's switching my house to something other than Sonos right now would be a task that I would undertake only after great consideration as to why I'm doing this, right? Because it's an ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And when the ecosystem works together, it's great. Just like HomePods, and that is an ecosystem, right? And you have them all together, and it's nice to be able to walk through the house and do all those things. Sonos's software has gone off the rails, and I'm not just talking about the software update that came out this year, which they updated their app. I actually kind of understand why they did what they did. They chose an MVP feature set for their completely rebuilt from the ground up app. And by MVP, I mean minimum viable product. That's what, when you're building stuff, you come up with an MVP and you ship it, and then you just keep going from there. And they committed to this MVP, even though it was lacking features that people were using in the other app, like being able to edit an in-progress playlist. Like there were some questions I had about their bar as to what made an MVP, but they wanted to get it out there and they wanted to do their thing. And so they did it. And that has been getting better in terms of features, but it's just unreliable sometimes. And it's frustrating. Are you seeing that, Pete? I know you're a Sonos household.
I'm a big Sonos user, but I haven't used that at all. Haven't seen that, but I haven't, again, I use the app. I just, you know, I listen either to radio or podcast, but occasionally audio.
Does the app work for you? Like, for me, yeah. So let me describe my problem. And I know I'm not alone, but okay. I'm curious if I'm alone here. We'll launch the app and I'll go to search for something on Apple Music and it'll say, oh, I can't search, or it won't see all of my devices some of the time. Are either of you seeing that with any Sonos devices? You're not seeing that, Pete?
I haven't seen that, no. But again, I'm like, for the most part, like my most used device is my original Sonos Move.
Okay.
And I use that in Bluetooth mode more than anything else. Now, occasionally I use the app with that, but otherwise, you know, I use the app in the bedroom to listen to music. And actually, the weird thing with the new house, the TV with the sound bar and the sub and the rear speakers and all that is downstairs. It's not our main one. So I almost never use that. We're not down there very much. There's a downstairs den.
Yeah.
And so.
Okay. Yeah. So you're not seeing, yeah. I think part of my problem
is. I'm not using it enough like you are in that sense.
Yeah. Well, I think part of the problem is that I am. I have a lot of Sonos devices and some of them are not the newest. So there's that. And I go back and forth over the years. I've wired my Sonos device, one Sonos device in, and let it use its Sonos Net thing. Now, after a conversation with Sonos for the last 6 months or so, I'm just all on Wi-Fi with them, which has been better. But I know this stuff is hard. Mesh networking is difficult. Yeah. It's all difficult. However, yeah, it's frustrating. Go ahead.
Yep. Oh, I was just gonna say, I never use the Sonos app because my only Sonos use is my television soundbar and subwoofer and stuff like that. So like, I never have to mess with it. So from a music perspective, I'm all HomePod. But I did have a question on the HomePod tip, the resetting the HomePod tip.
Yeah, let's bring us back to that, please.
Now, does doing it on your Mac, is that any different than doing it from the app and, you know, going in and saying reset HomePod and factory resetting it, or doing it manually, which is how I've always done it, where you unplug the HomePod, you plug it back in, you wait 10 seconds till you see the white spinning light and you hold your finger on it till it turns red. And then the HomePod says, hey, I'm about to reset. You lift your finger, it beeps three times, and then it like factory resets itself, and then you set it up from scratch again. Huh. So I don't know if it's any different, but it seems like there's multiple ways to reset a HomePod. But yeah. I'm curious if doing it from the Mac does something extra. So if anybody knows.
Yeah, good question.
Feedback at MacGeekGab.com.
Hold on, you heard him. Feedback@MacGeekGab.com. Send the question in now.
Wait.
Pull over.
Yes, pull over first, please. Yeah. And then write to feedback@MacGeekGab.com.
Yeah, and hopefully it's an answer, though, not a question, because it's my question. So
Right. That's true. Yeah, it's okay. We like answers just as much as we like questions. We might even like them more. Right. So Todd's got a flotilla of tips for us here. So,
ooh, yeah. Flotilla. Yeah. The first one he sends in, I've used it in macOS. I've never used it in iOS, and it's cool to know that it's there. I had never even thought about it. He says, I accidentally discovered on iOS 18, when you have a URL, it's easy for me to say, on the clipboard, select text in iOS mail or notes, and I imagine even in messages or any Apple app probably. Tap on the selected text. Okay, so let me back up. You got a URL on the clipboard. You select text. Tap on the selected text and then tap paste. The selected text now becomes a hyperlink. So exploring more, he found in the iOS mail app that selecting text, tapping on it, and a new to me option is in the pop-up link, pop-up, click add link, or sorry, he says new to me, new to Todd.
Everything all right, Pete?
Option. new to me too. Try to read this. It was in quotes, and so I thought, oh, I better read that. the pop-up is add link, and as a bonus tip, you highlight the text in Apple Mail. And on the Mac, I do this all the time. I highlight text, hit Control-K.
Command-K.
And a little window pops up. Command-K. And a little window pops up. You paste your URL in there, and your highlighted text thus becomes a link. So instead of seeing the whole link, it could say, for instance, click here. If they click there, it's going to go to that URL, not to clickhere.com.
Adam, you like to create links that say click here? Is that one of your favorite things to do as a web developer?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I did that in mail a lot for my elderly mother because she would, you know, a URL would have driven her nuts. But if I said tap here on your iPad, she got that. So
cool.
Sorry.
All right. You want to take us to Todd's next one?
Yeah. So
2.0.
Todd gave us another one. He says, hey, I have an engineer at work who was working on a disk intensive simulation. So he took some of his MacBook M4's 64 gigs of RAM and made a RAM disk. I have not thought about using RAM disks since my Mac 2CI. And then he linked to the instructions on how to do that in the terminal, little article on GitHub. So I just want to add to this because I'm assuming at this point some people are wondering, what is a RAM disk? It was a way to set aside a portion of your memory that can be used as a disk, basically. So your internal memory can be chunked out. You can say, I want to grab 8 gigabytes, and it will make a drive out of it, basically, that will mount, and then you can use that drive for various things. Typically, you would do it for this exact type of situation. You have something high performance, and you need it to run quickly. The only caveat and thing you need to remember is it's RAM, which means that if you power down your machine, or the power goes out, or something like that, all that stuff is lost. So just be careful with them. You know, it's not like an actual drive. It's not going to retain that memory because it's random access memory that you're using.
In this GitHub thing, I mean, really what it talks about, it's just using the diskutil command from the terminal. So it's totally built into the OS. They do link to 4 third-party tools to make this easier. One of them is not available at all, there's really just one that I think is available called RAMDisk, and we'll link to that too. But it's all circularly linked together.
Built-in command, right? But like I was trying to remember because that was the other thing I was trying to quickly Google was like I thought back in the day when we had a good UI for disk utility, that you could do it in the GUI, but.
Oh, could you?
I don't
you?
Know if you can.
Oh,
I don't know.
Maybe.
I didn't see anything mentioning it. So I'm assuming when they redid the whole disk utility thing and took away all the cool features that one went by the wayside too.
Yeah, you might be right. Yeah. It's worth reiterating. Data that you put on a RAM disk goes away when you reboot or turn off your Mac. It is not persistently not a real disk. Stored. Right. So just wanted to say it out loud so that we all know what we're doing here. But yeah, we used to use RAM disks all the time for exactly this kind of thing. And then we moved to SSDs and it became less necessary. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Fun. All right. Well, Todd 3.0 has a nice tip for us. He says, I just learned that if you want to pause your workout, you can do it on your Apple Watch by pressing the crown and the side button at the same time. I had no idea that you could do that. I've had it ask me, are you done? You know, it looks like you're driving, Dave. Do you want to still get credit for doing this hike or whatever? But yeah, you can pause a workout by hitting the crown and the side button. So the two things on the same side, just make sure if you have a watch with an action button that you don't also hit that like with your thumb as you're trying to get leverage. But yeah, fun stuff. Woo.
Wondering now too, if I'm doing an Apple Fitness session, what happens?
Oh,
and I try question. That. I'm going to try that next time and see. Will it pause my whole Apple Fitness like video session thing or...
All right, folks. So this one's a little different because not only is Private Internet Access, or PIA VPN, a sponsor of this episode, they're also one of our CES 2025 coverage sponsors. And we're stoked to have them on board, supporting our travel and expenses for all the coverage we'll be bringing you early next month. Now, let me ask you this. When you're online, do you really know who's watching? If your answer is probably no one, think again. Using an unprotected internet connection is like wearing a neon sign that says, hack me, I dare you. But Private Internet Access, PIA VPN, has your back. PIA VPN is your digital bodyguard, encrypting your data and letting you choose from servers in 91 countries and all 50 states. You want to stream region-locked content or snag cheaper flights by pretending you're in Antarctica? PIA makes it happen. Plus, I've been using PIA for so long, I actually paid for it before they became a sponsor. And PIA VPN is available for all platforms, Windows, macOS, Android, Linux, iOS, and many more. And you can use one subscription to protect an unlimited amount of devices at the same time. Oh, and, you know, I always like to put an Easter egg in. PIA's encryption is so advanced, I'm 90% sure it's powered by quantum hamsters running on encrypted wheels. You didn't hear it from me, though. Don't get caught with your data in the wild. Go to PIAVPN.com/MGG to get 83% off. That's just $2.03 a month, plus 4 free months. There's also a 30-day money-back guarantee, so it's completely risk-free. Again, that's PIAVPN.com/MGG to get 83% off, plus 4 free months. You're gonna love it. Thanks again to PIA for keeping us secure and supporting all the coverage we'll be bringing you from CES 2025. Woohoo! While we're thanking people, I would love to take a minute and thank everyone whose premium contributions have come in since the last time we took a minute to thank you, which has been a couple of weeks. You can learn about this at macgeekup.com/premium. As we always say, it is certainly not mandatory, obviously. It is very much appreciated and certainly fundamental to what it takes for us to be able to produce this show the way that we do every single week. Thanks to Donald and Revere for a $100 contribution. Thanks to Stanley in Catonsville for a $50 contribution. Thanks to Eric in Sun Prairie for a $45 contribution. Thanks to Andrew in North Glen and Rob in Sorumsand for $30 contributions. And then thanks to the following for $25 contributions. Mikhail in Altadena, Michael in Attleboro, Roger in Blaine, Anthony in Chicago, Stephen in Colompton, Jim in Harvard, Monroe in Morgantown, David in Oconomowoc. That's a lot of O's. Okay. Someone in Orlando, my database script didn't capture their name, which is fascinating to me. Okay. Peter in Oslo, Brent in Philadelphia, Tim in St. Augustine, David in Stillwater, Larry in Irvine, Javier in Jacksonville, and John in Ypsilanti. And then thanks to the following for $10 contributions. James in Amity Harbor, Jason in Charlestown, Jeff in Chesterton, Robert in Columbiana, Stephen in Costa Mesa, Jeremiah in Edgewater, Ward in Gilbert, Paul in Lawrenceville, Joseph in Marietta, James in Melbourne, Stephen in Plainfield, Jonathan in Plainsboro, Cal in Russellville, Mark in Vero Beach, John in Vienna, Donald in Furlong, Nick in Marquette, Wagner in Allen, James in San Antonio, Phil in Summers, Mark in Coopersburg, Scott in Bourbonnais, Neil in West Hartford, Abel in Santa Rosa, and Peter in Auburn. Thank you so much to all of you for allowing us and supporting us and doing what we get to do. So it's pretty cool, and we are ever so thankful for it all the time. So truly, thank you. Shall we do some cool stuffs? Found, guys?
That yes, sir. Should.
Cool. You want to start us off, Pete?
I'm doing it as quick so I can call up that note. There it is. I found it. So Gary writes in about the Rockford Rugged case.
I think it's Rock AMGG Form, crew. Right?
Rockford.
Form.
Pretty sure Form, F-O-R-M. You typed Ford because you were a big fan of the Rockford Files, but I'm pretty sure he talked that about must the Rockford.
Well, my sister was born in Rockford, so.
Oh, there it is.
Okay. Now you can hack my password, so, you know, because that's a secret question to.
Well, yeah, he passwords. Said it's interesting because he talked about the Rockford Rugged case, but also talked about the Rock Lock. All right, well, you talk about this.
Well, Rock Lock are the accessories.
Yeah.
To it. So, and he talks about that in here.
Yeah,
so
I think it's Rockform. Yeah.
We're going to get the link in the show notes. So no matter what you do, go to our show notes and you'll get there from here.
Yeah. It's Rockform. Rockform. Keep going.
There you go. Hey, MGG crew. I was listening to MGG 1067 and you guys were talking about phone cases going from people who do not have a case at all to ones who need one. If you are an outdoors person or otherwise tend to drop your phone, I would personally recommend the Rockform Rugged case. I have one for my iPhone 16 Pro Max. It has a strong MagSafe and even has magnets on the back where you can stick it onto a metal object like your toolbox, your fridge, and so on. The case has a magnetic and non-magnetic plug, which you remove based on whether you intend to use the non-MagSafe Qi wireless charger. You can also take the plug out if you intend to use one of their Rock Lock accessories. They have bike mounts, car mounts, motorcycle mounts, and others. The case is not cheap at $70 for the Pro Max, but personally, I think it's worth the money for the protection it gives your phone. It's screen protector friendly, and I currently have it on my phone with an ESR tempered glass screen protector. The case has textured grips on the sides and provides easy access to the camera control button. If you have a thicker charging cable, you will not have any issues with them. Check them out at rockform.com, rockform.com. Keep up the great work, guys. Gary.
Yeah. And the moral to this cool stuff found?
Yes.
Autocorrect is not your friend.
Yeah, I think that's correct.
Bingo, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, well, fun stuff. That's great.
Yeah. Blame it on Gary's autocorrect. That's my story, and I'm stuck with it.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Yeah, I think you're spot on, Adam. Yeah. Let's see. Pascal writes in with our next cool stuff found in response to in 1067. He says, I heard you talk about Clean My Mac and Space Lens and how it was missing now. He says, I am not a Clean My Mac user, but it looks like Grand Perspective could be an addition to some toolboxes to do something similar as Space Lens and find all of the things that are taking up space on your disk. He says, I've been using Grand Perspective for a couple of years now, and it has served me well to identify large files and then do the cleanup. It is free on SourceForge and available for a few dollars on the Mac App Store if you'd rather get it there. Thank you for that, Pascal. Yeah.
I'm glad it's still around. I wasn't sure.
I wasn't either. And so I was like, oh, great, I'll download it. And when I downloaded it, I went to move it from my applications folder or from my downloads folder to my applications folder. It says, would you like to overwrite?
Like, you already had it.
Turns out I already had it. So, yeah. Yeah. And it works. I never preferred its weird sort of, you know, abstract art display of where my stuff is, but
it's got the retro Kai's power tools, like, that's aesthetic.
Yeah,
you're yeah. Right. Yeah, with yeah. the old, we had gradients on everything back in the day, remember?
Mm-hmm. Yep, it sure does.
It harkens back to a little bit of Aqua.
It's very Aqua. Yes. Yes.
And they've never changed, and I hope they never do. I love it.
Yeah. So
It's free. I mean, that's the thing. Of all these tools, that's the free one, and it does the same thing.
It's not the only free one.
For the most
part. They explain that Grand Perspective, you can download it from SourceForge for free or $3 from the App Store. And they say the difference is that when you get it from the App Store, you know that it has passed Apple's review and quality control. And you also receive automatic updates, as with the caveat from the beginning of the episode. But there is another free one out there, and it is called Ooh. Omni Disk Sweeper the Omni folks. Yeah, from the Omni Group folks. Again, one of our CES 2025 sponsors. And this is the one that I always wind up going back to. It's if you want it to do everything on your disk, you have to run it as root, and that gets a little bit, you know, different, but it's fine. So so that's the one that I go with. I run it from the command line. I do sudo space slash, and then I drag the app in so that it finds the application folder thing. And
you scrolled down and I saw OmniWeb too. Is that still Jeff's primary browser?
Is it still Jeff Gammon's primary browser? He used that, man. He was an OmniWeb user for a very, very long time. Yeah. They say that there are test builds. How new? Oh.
I look like it was Tiger and back, but I don't know.
There's a test build from November 29th. So, like, this is still a going concern. Amazing. Amazing. Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. Who knew? All right.
So I have a little bit of follow up, because last episode we had somebody asking about creating booklets. And another interesting thing that I think I discovered, because we got a few people that I think we got feedback from on booklets. It seems like making booklets is a thing that is in, if you're a priest or you work with a parish or something like that, I guess this is the thing they do.
Yeah.
Because most of the people that responded said, hey, I am a priest, or I have a parish, and this is what I do. And that includes Father John, who responded, because we had asked, I found just through some Googling a piece of software called Booklet 2. And I said, is it any good? And Father John wrote back and he said, I am a retired parish priest, and I worked in smaller congregations for many years preparing Sunday service bulletins that needed to be printed in booklet form. Sometimes there were other materials that were handier to use in that form factor as well. So I can empathize with the... Oh, he was writing a response to Father John. Sorry, this is Tom.
Yes. Tom, a.k.a. the Sermonator.
Yes, sir. Oh, I love it.
Same.
I mixed them up, so sorry about that, Tom. But anyway, he said, I spent many hours fiddling around trying to create decent booklets before I found this app. I tried some other solutions that I found on the web, but none of them worked properly or were nearly as elegant as Create Booklet. I bought Create Booklet quite a number of years ago before it became Create Booklet 2. And while the first version was great, the second edition refined things that much more. It's a great piece of software with a lot of customization control, but the developer has built-in guides to walk you through the setup, making it pretty easy to use. So it sounds like that is a great way to go for booklets. I also wanted to throw in, it's not in the show notes, I'm going to throw Dave a curveball here right now, an honorable mention, because we also got feedback from new listener new listener, Allison, who linked to a SetApp article, because there are so a few apps, I think, in SetApp, but a SetApp article that tells you how to create booklets in Preview. So you can actually do it in Preview. From what I understand with Preview, though, the trick is you have to kind of do a lot of manual work with the layout. So I feel like just having one of these apps, especially if Create Booklet 2 is really good, it's going to save you a lot of time. But if you want to save money and aren't afraid of doing a little fiddling, it sounds like you can create them with Preview as well.
Nice. Sweet. Yeah. Good stuff. Love it.
And as Tony, who sent in that quick tip earlier from Anderson, South Carolina, also works in a church. So yeah. He does it for his Sunday bulletins. So
that makes, makes sense that would do it. Yeah. Interesting. I have a cool stuff found sitting right behind me here, if I can aim my hand. But for those of you who are not watching the video stream, I set up some Yeelight cubes, and these Yeelight cubes are pretty cool because they're smart lights. They have different patterns that you can do with them. They are HomeKit compatible as Amazon and Google and, you know, all that stuff. But what's cool about them is the way that they work together. You set up one and then they're these tiny little cubes. Well, tiny is the wrong word. Maybe, 3 inches across. And once you set up the first one, you plug it in, you get it all Wi-Fi and ready and everything. And then you just connect others with magnets, and you can adjust their angles, and you can have them. I have mine kind of set up as a tower, but you can certainly set them up as, across, like sitting on top of your desk. And there's all different kinds of things you can do with them. You can have them show clocks. You can have them show shapes. You can have them just show like colors, static colors, rotating colors. And it's fun stuff. It's really simple the way that they work. So I set them up the other day and was like, oh man, I know we've talked about them on the show before, but I'd never actually put my hands on them. And now as soon as I did, it was like, oh, these are super fun. So, Yeelight, Yeelight.
And it looks like you have the grid ones, but they have looks like a panel light and also a spotlight option.
Yeah, you're right.
And
I have
mix and match.
And
it
you,
seems like.
You can mix and match them. You set up the base to kind of do its thing, and then they can all just sort of work from there. But yeah, I have several different kinds. I have four grids in the middle. I have a panel light at the top, and then the very bottom, which you can't see on my video, is sort of it almost looks like a headlamp, and I have that aimed back against the wall, and you can kind of see it spotlighting its colors just to the kind of right next to it against the wall if you're watching the video. So yeah, the Yeelight stuff, it's fun. And you can add to it. That's the really fun part is, you know, if you get more, you can just stack them and you can have them next to each other and build, you know, grids of them and all that stuff. It's fun. It's a cool little piece of tech, or a cool little family of tech, I should say. So,
yeah.
I also, we've got time to do one more cool stuff found before we get to our questions. I saw when I was at PepCom most recently, but I'm a fan of portable screens in general, and ViewSonic has always been a market leader in those. I always use a portable screen. I'll bring one to CES with us. I bring one most of the time when I travel because I really like being able to just pull the screen out of my, you know, carry-on bag and have two screens with my laptop wherever I happen to be working. ViewSonic came out with a new one. It is the VG1656N. It's a 16-inch screen. Essentially 1080p. It's not 4K. Has a great image on it. And it's not only battery powered, it's got about 3 hours of runtime. It is wireless if you want it to be. You can certainly plug it in with USB-C, you know, and go that route to your Mac, and that works fine. But it also comes with a little dongle that can plug in USB-C to your Mac or your iPhone or your iPad. And then you just turn the screen on, and now you've got a wireless screen for your iPhone or your iPad or your Mac while you're doing a presentation, which could be very cool if you need to be somewhere and you're doing a presentation for a small group of people or something and you just want to have your screen there and that's, you know, that's what you've got while you're traveling. It's a pretty, it's a really interesting thing, and you can do screen rotation with it and, you know, all the stuff. So it comes with its own little case / stand that you can set it a couple different angles. So yeah, it's an interesting thing. We'll put a link to it in the show notes, of course, but yeah, the VG1656N. So wireless business monitor, they call it. And I can attest to that. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. So anyway, that's where we're at. What's that, Pete?
Way to run your wireless business.
It gives you a lot of flexibility with things, right? So yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah.
That's slick.
Yep. It is. It's pretty slick. You want to take us to TIG, Pete?
I'm going to do so at this time because TIG wrote in and said, I have a friend that is trying to record live music sessions to GarageBand and she's getting an error. See the screen capture attached and it says disc is too slow, parentheses, write. Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
No, not okay. How about a not okay option there, Apple? Just asking for a friend.
Yeah, I think, am I the only like hardcore GarageBand user? Like a lot of people may not know, like I started the MacCast with GarageBand and I ended the MacCast 20 years later with GarageBand.
Wow.
So
nice. Okay.
Never ever switched off anything else. I have a license for
Logic.
Logic Pro. Yeah.
Yep.
And, you know, it was just way more than I needed to ever do what little thing that I had to do. So anyway.
So let me give it just a couple more details of it. She's recording four tracks, and it happens after about 66 minutes. So he asks, are there any settings she needs to fix, or have you seen this error? And then Adam went on to answer.
Yeah. Yeah. So first, I want to put out kind of a PSA, is that the right way to say it? Because we had a couple of these come up this week, a couple of questions come in this week. If you are sending a question, especially if it's a technical question, if you could provide your Mac that you're talking about, like the specs for your Mac, like what model and the specs, and also what version of macOS you're running, that does help us kind of troubleshoot these things. So I sent that back. I don't know if I ever got an answer. But just off the top of my head, I mean, the message, I think, is indicating, hey, we're having trouble writing in real time all this data to your disk. So something's going on with the disk. And my first inclination is a lot of times with GarageBand, especially with newer Macs, if you have one with a small internal drive, people might plug in an external drive and be recording directly to an external drive. That can be slow, especially if it's a spinning drive and not an SSD. So, you know, definitely I would recommend using SSDs. Thunderbolt is going to be better for this kind of application than, say, USB. Although USB-C, we probably talk through that. But you're going to want, if you're using an external, you need it to be fast. You want it to be fast. Yeah. But I would recommend as much as possible just using your internal drive if you can. And then also make sure if you are using your internal drive or just anything else, you don't have a bunch of background applications running that might be doing read-write operations to your drive at the same time, because that's going to slow things down. So you might want to temporarily turn off any kind of cloud syncing, or if you have automated backups running in the background, temporarily pause those. Just, you know, give GarageBand as much access to the disk as you possibly can. Again, if you can use the local internal one, that's going to give you the best performance. Trying to think of anything else that I would recommend. I mean, that's mostly it. You know, it does need to be quick. And so, I guess the last thing that I would think of is something that I think we were talking about last show and why we brought up tools like Grand Perspective and all these other things. If your internal disk is really, really full, you might want to do some house cleaning too and give yourself a little overhead, a little room, because it's, you know, again, GarageBand is doing a lot of stuff in the background with that disk in real time, especially if you're doing multiple tracks. This isn't a lot of, four tracks is not a lot of tracks these days.
No.
So your Mac should definitely be able to handle it. Why it happens at exactly 66 minutes, again, that may have to do with storage space and where you're at with like filling things up. So depending upon what you're doing. So I would try all those things.
66 minutes is a very long recording time for for GarageBand's stated use. Although, you know, I say that, and we are 49 minutes into a podcast, and you certainly could use GarageBand to record a podcast, as you proved for 20 years, Adam. So,
I did 2 hour ones.
Yeah,
exactly. 2 hour plus ones.
Right. So, but yes, audio. Anybody who's listened to this show long enough has heard me like lament, but also heard us run into walls with dealing with the fact that we are recording audio in a real-time environment, which is what GarageBand is doing too. It's attempting to replicate the same thing that happened with tape, where you just had tape and the tape just kept rolling. And it kept storing the data that was coming into it. The same thing happens on your computer. The tape needs to keep rolling. And in this case, the tape is your disk. And if the disk can't roll at its consistent speed, or can't write at its consistent speed, you have a problem. This is not an issue we ran into with tape unless there was a problem with the motor on the tape deck. but it's the same thing, right? You need that. It needs to be able to flush those buffers in real time to the disk, in addition to doing all of the processing that you're asking it to do on the way between that, whatever the source is, your microphone or who knows what, and the disk. So, but this error is about the disk and specifically the write speed. That's what it's saying. But yeah, real time audio. It takes a lot to make that magic happen. So.
Yep. I'll take us to Bill.
All right.
If we're ready.
I'm
Bill
ready.
Has a question about Apple Watch. He says, I have an Apple Watch Series 8 running Watch OS 11.1. I use the workout app on the watch multiple times a day for jogging and or walking. One thing that has vexed me for a long time is how to change the default workout within a type of workout. For example, I currently have a 2.5 mile run as the default running workout. However, I'd like to change the default to an open run. I know I can get to an open run among other running workouts by tapping on the three dots and scrolling down. However, no matter how many times I start an open workout, the next time I go running, the 2.5 mile workout appears as the running workout. Then it's back to the three dots. It seems to me that once years ago, I was able to change the default workout, but haven't been able to figure out how I figure it out again, nor have I been able to find anything online instructing me how to do it. I suppose brute force way to make the open run the default running workout is to delete all other stored workouts, but that seems like using a hammer to crack an egg. Any ideas?
Well, would that be a ball peen hammer? could we get something, maybe a tack hammer?
Right.
This is how the Apple Watch is. It's frustrating. There is no official way to set a specific workout type as the default. The intended stated behavior is that it will default to whatever you used last. Obviously, that's not always going to be the case, as Bill has proven. So, yes, I would use the hammer, or maybe just a scalpel here and do a surgical strike and only delete the 2.5 mile workout. I'm thinking there's something about that one that it keeps coming back to. So delete that one, try it, see what happens, see if it defaults. Then you can add a 2.5 mile workout back in and see what happens there. But yeah, I think you're going to have to, you know, there's something in a plist file that's not happy, but we don't have a plist editor for Apple Watch. So you've just got to use the graphical interface that Apple gives us. And so you have to delete it, but maybe you only have to delete that one. So it's not quite the overkill approach, but you might need the overkill approach. I don't know, but that's the next thing I'd try, is just slice out the one, see what happens. Go from there.
Good luck.
Right.
Good luck. Yeah. And report back, please. Yeah.
Just want to say good luck. We're all counting on you.
That's right. All right.
Okay.
Yeah, go.
Well, next, Chris wrote in. He said, morning, chaps. I guess I know where he's from. He is from the UK, indeed. He says, I have a client who is running an Intel iMac from a large external SSD. In fact, he is running two like this. One of the Macs now refuses to boot from any external. The screen goes black with a cursor flashing in the top left corner. We've tried booting from two different SSDs with the same result. The problem does seem to move to the second Mac when you move drives, so I'm struggling to isolate the issue. Any ideas where to go next? I have tried different cables, different drive caddies, ran disk first aid, boot from an internal, and the drive is accessible, just not bootable. iMac is running macOS 13.6. Chris.
Yep. This one was weird. I was like, what? I have never heard of this in my entire life, where it just goes to a black screen with like a cursor. So, of course, I do what I do, and I warmed up my fingers and did a little Google foo, and it told me what this issue likely is. I don't run from externals, so I would assume this might even come up on the Mac at some point. But basically, it seems this has to do with auto-updating of the operating system. And apparently what can happen is that the update starts, the auto-update starts, and then gets stuck on the login screen. So I found a thread about this over on Apple's discussion boards. We'll link to it. But basically, the solution is you need to shut down the computer. So turn it off. If it's locked up, obviously at this screen, you might have to hold the power button down for 10 seconds or so. And you know, that'll shut down the machine. And then when you restart it, you want to press shift at the same time you're restarting it until you see your progress bar moving. And then once you reach the point where the screen has gone dark and you see the cursor, you type the first letter of the username for your machine, you hit enter, and then you type the password and hit enter. And then after a moment, you should see the spinning beach ball, and then the screen should move on to something along the lines like completing Mac or OS 10 installation, and then you need to let it finish. Now be aware it could like fall back asleep, so you might have to like tap the space bar to get it to wake back up to kind of see the progress, but that should allow that auto update to then complete. So apparently that's the solution. I did get that back to Chris. Chris fixed the issue in a different way before this, and this makes just as much sense. Chris wrote back and said, I did a over-the-top install of the operating system on the external. Right, so like he just reinstalled the OS basically. So it's just a stuck OS update apparently. Huh. But I didn't know about the little trick about the first letter of your username and then typing the password, which I found interesting.
Yeah, that's I like that. That's interesting.
Yep.
Love it. Love it. It's good.
All right. We've got time for our last one here from Timothy.
Yeah, we might have time for some bonus ones too, which I'll surprise us with. Yeah.
It looks like we reached the end of the internet, Dave.
I know. I evidently didn't copy like all the extra stuff into the agenda like I usually do, and I was just realizing that. I'm like, how is this possible? It's not. Go ahead and take us
we've
to Timothy.
Moved along quickly today. Yeah, so Timothy says, I just got a MacBook Air M3. Well, congrats. And he says, love it. It's running Sonoma out of the box. What would be reasons for staying with Sonoma rather than upgrading to Sequoia right away? If I upgraded to Sequoia now and ran into an issue, how difficult would it be to go back to Sonoma? Thanks, Tim.
Ooh, pick Dave.
Yeah.
Do you have this issue? Is there experience in the room?
There is. Not with 15 versus 14, but I think either 14.13 or 13.12 or something. I needed to prove Apple's engineers wrong that the aggregate device issue that was happening was related to the operating system upgrade and not some other thing that I had done. So answering Timothy's questions in reverse, rolling back from the one operating system, one major version to the prior major version is not supported. There's no version of Migration Assistant that's going to let you do this. However, you can do an over-the-top install of it and force it into place, and it will run some stuff. The things that had problems were Apple apps, because like Mail, you can't put the new version of Mail on the old operating system, and my database had already upgraded. Same with Photos. But third-party apps were fine, and also Logic was fine. And yes, I proved that this was Apple's problem, not mine, and they did not like hearing that. But that's the only way you get Apple to fix a bug is by putting them in a corner. This is about Timothy, though. So if you need to roll back, you will have to nuke and pave. That is the right thing. And it is also what I wound up doing eventually after I proved them wrong. It was like, okay, well, now my system, like that part of it works great, but the rest of it's a disaster. So I don't recommend it. So if you have to roll back, you've got to take backups and then just nuke and pave and go from there. Your question about upgrading, should you upgrade from 14 to 15, macOS 14 to macOS 15? I have macOS 15 on every machine but the one I'm sitting at here, and I love it on all of them. It's been working great for me. I love the AI features. I love the integrations. Every bit of it is great. There were two reasons I was holding out here in the studio, and I am told that one of them is gone, and that is the drivers for my audio interface, my Personas Quantum 2626, which I use for the show and everything else, band rehearsals, music recording, all that stuff. The drivers for that are now compatible with macOS 15, which is great, and I always wait a little bit for that reason. The other thing is the thing I've now mentioned, I think, three episodes in a row, and everybody's sick and tired of it, is the changes to web apps. I just need to figure out how to make Unite from BZG apps work for me, and then we're good to go. So that's I just got to go third party on that, which kind of sucks because not that there's anything wrong with Unite, but I like being first party with those sorts of things. I don't know, but clearly they did not fully Sherlock him. In fact, they un-Sherlocked him over at BZG apps. Is that a term? Did we just make it up?
Sure.
Sure. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
I can add, I mean, I upgraded pretty quickly and I've had zero issues. So, unless you have some, I think, more specialized things like a weird audio interface, but like I have a Motu. And it was fine. Like I had no issues with it. So.
Yeah. All right. We're doing good in question mode here. So we're just going to keep going with questions. And
awesome.
Yeah. I'll jump us to Paul's question because it's been one that I know we talked about a little bit on our own, but had never really talked about in the show. And so Paul's question is, he doesn't have a lot of space on his internal drive, and he has over 2 terabytes of files on his iCloud drive. And he wants to store local copies of everything in his iCloud drive. And so he asks, is it possible to move the local iCloud drive storage from my boot disk to my external drive? And he says, I promise I would leave the external drive permanently connected. Just how do I do this? I have thoughts on this, but if either of you, I see a lot of shrugs happening.
Stump the geek. Like I wouldn't do it. I'd be scared to do it, honestly, but maybe it's possible.
Well, that that is how my advice to him would start to, Adam, is that everything I'm about to share falls into the very rarely recommended category.
You're right? Now in test pilot mode.
Yeah, well, that's exactly. The thing. Like this is unsupported and it's Apple. So your local iCloud drive cache is in your home folder, and with all the searching I did about this, no one recommends trying to change that. However, there is one thing that Apple does support, and that is moving your entire home folder to an external drive. Still boot from the internal, but your home directory is on the external, and therefore the cache for your iCloud drive is there too. And there's articles online. I'll put one from Apple Insider about moving your home folder. That's probably the best I would do. And then, but you could also just install macOS on the external drive and boot from that. And I know that gets wonky now too. But if you, there are ways of making that happen. And then once you do that, then everything is also fine. I think that installing macOS on the external is the only thing that is still supported by Apple. So that then there is a knowledge base article about that. I cannot find an Apple knowledge base article anymore about moving just a user's home folder, even though all of the functionality appears to still be there. So
yeah, that one scares me too. Like there used to be articles, I think OWC had a great article about how to do that, or it might have been Bombic software.
Yeah,
somebody
right.
did out right. online. Maybe even ChronoSync, but you're getting into dangerous territory. Let's just say that.
Like, totally.
Like you said at the beginning, like I would not do it. And it just further illustrates the crime against humanity that Apple is perpetrating with having base level storage on a Mac be 256 gigabytes at this point.
Right.
Like, need to fix that. That is a horrible thing to do to people.
Preach on. I'm dealing with
might
it
as well
now.
Be a Chromebook you're selling there, Apple.
Yeah, I have the base model Mac Studio, the OG Mac Studio is what I have here in my studio. And it's awesome. Like the thing has more power than I've ever needed thus far and that I can predict needing. I don't want to say that I'll ever need, but that's basically what I'm saying.
Who needs more than 40 gigabyte hard
exactly.
drive?
Exactly. But it's got a 512 gig internal drive. And so I am constantly dancing on the – I have a slew of Hazel scripts that take the things that I save to that drive and archive them off after, 10 days or something. Because if I didn't keep up with it proactively, I would run up into that wall all the time. So
– I literally don't understand it from I would love to be able to have a conversation, and it'll never happen, with them on the financial side of this thing. So either they bought so much of this stuff that they just got it like lying around, this small stuff. But it's my understanding at this point, it actually costs more to get the smaller stuff because nobody's making it anymore.
Yeah.
Like, and the prices they charge are ridiculous when you look at current storage. SSD pricing. There is no justification for it whatsoever other than greed at this point.
Yes.
Fish shake, Apple.
The fish shake. it doesn't. Yes. 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 It's ridiculous.
And it needs to be said over and over again by many, many more people. I have not written Tim Cook about it yet, but I probably should. We probably all should.
Yeah.
I should make my thoughts known directly to T. Cook at Apple.com for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
All sure. right.
Take us to Ron. This is another one that's kind of been sitting around, but suddenly becomes more relevant again. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He says, Ron writes in, he says, I was really bummed when I found out my cable company was dropping support for TiVo. I searched for alternatives, but nothing matched the TiVo experience, including my cable company's DVR. I took your advice and set up Channels DVR over the weekend, connecting it to YouTube TV. I put the Channels server on an old 2015 27-inch iMac that I pulled out of retirement, and as a bonus, it now doubles as a TV in my kitchen. That setup was straightforward, and so far it's been great. I agree. The interface is sublime. That's him saying that, but I'm going to second that. It is so simple. Even a novice can do it. Just follow the instructions and you'll be right in like Flint. We're planning to give it a thorough test drive this week, aiming to cut the cord next week. Thanks for the fantastic recommendation. Best, Ron. And oh, by the way, I just got to notice YouTube TV is again raising their prices another $10 a month.
Yeah.
Because they can.
Of course.
I wanted to share this because I'm always a little bit hesitant. I know that Channels is the right answer for so many of us, that I'm always a little hesitant when I recommend channels to people because it's a little bit nerdy and requires a little bit of setup. But I say that because that was my chosen path through it. I chose to set up channels inside of a Docker container on my QNAP NAS for Synology, but I completely bypassed, and therefore it's not top of mind for me, the macOS setup of channels server, which is trivial and way simpler than the crazy path I set up for myself. And I proved that to myself again this week. There are some channels that have now been adding DRM to their streams, and therefore channels by default, the app, channels the app, cannot see them the way that it does things through TVE, TV Everywhere. However, the folks at Channels have built a companion app called Chrome Capture for Channels, which you run as a separate thing. You point channels to it, and it then lets you authenticate in Chrome on whatever device you want to run Chrome on, and then it streams from there, and it's also flawless. And yet again, I tried setting this up in my DVR or in my my NAS, right? And I created all kinds of headaches, and finally I was like, I just want this to work. And so I set it up on my Mac, and it took 3 seconds. I was going to say 3 minutes, but it really didn't. It just works, and it's great. So I'll put links to both of those things. But yes, Channels DVR, setting it up on your Mac, that's the way to start this. If you then decide you want to move it to your NAS or whatever, have the functionality, have the experience of using it, because it's super simple. And then if for whatever reason you want to move it to something else, at least now you know what you're doing. You know how easy it is to use, and you know the headache you're adding to your own scenario just because you want to, just like I did. But it really isn't a headache scenario. So thank you, Ron, for sending this in and reminding us all that this really is super simple. And with cable cards going away through most cable companies, you can't run TiVo anymore. And this is the best alternative we've found. So,
I have one, and I only bring it up because I used to work quite a bit, or we would do shows with Ara Derderian over at the HDTV podcast, HDTV and Home Theater podcast. I think we even did a talk. I did a talk with him on some of this stuff way back in the day at Macworld. But a product he always recommended, and I think he used, was something called the HD Home Run from Silicon Dust.
Yes.
And so I think that's still a solution for this too, if you're willing. I never got into it because it is a little bit more technical, but it's basically a little box that you set up on your network, and you plug your stuff into it, and it basically does TiVo-like stuff, I think, on the network, but it like captures and records like live streaming TV and stuff like that. So if you're still in that world, this could be an option too.
So HD Home Run is the can be paired with Channels DVR. So you get the Channels interface using the HD Home Run antennas to pull HD TV from, you know, over the air. HD Home Run also has things that can link with streaming and that sort of thing too. But but they do have the antennas and get over the air local TV, HD TV that way too. So yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I just live in an all streaming world these days. I don't even know, other than live sports, which I'm not into, what do people even watch on live, I guess, news on live TV? Like,
I mean, it depends on what you're watching. There's a lot, like we've been watching Matlock, the new series, and Elsbeth and Yellowstone. And those are on, you can get them on streaming services, but they are also available on like Fubo. And so I don't have to pay for, each network streaming service. I pay for Fubo, and I get them all. Plus we get sports, which we like to watch our Bruins games and the Patriots games and stuff. So yeah. So yeah, it's,
you buried the lead, Dave.
What did I bury?
Chrome Capture for Channels.
This Chrome
Capture. You just mentioned it in passing.
I did. I set it up 2 days ago. Yeah. It works great.
Yeah. That's huge. I didn't know about that.
No.
I could be doing that in about 20 minutes.
I forgot about it. And then I set it up. I will find a better link than the one that I have in the show notes, because somebody on that Chrome Capture for Channels thread built a to do, like, step by step, here's how you set this up thing. And I keep losing it when it is the way that I went and did this. But don't do it in a Docker. Just set it up on, you have that Mac Mini running, Pete, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do that, because that's going to be the trick here. And I even thought about, well, if Pete sets it up on his Mac Mini, maybe I could just connect to that over the network, and we're good to go. But I can't. Right. I will find the instructions. I promise. It was some user who obviously went through a lot of time and trouble to set up these instructions. So I will find it. I promise. And we'll put that in the show notes. So, but I think that gets us to the end. Thanks for
this is the end, my friends.
No, not that.
Well, until next week.
Until next week. That's right. Yeah, we'll do this again. Yeah, that's right.
There'll be another end next week.
There'll be another end.
Actually, there'll be two ends next week: the front end and the back end. But yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
it's what I do, boys. That's why you invite me here.
Oh, no.
Trust me.
What's that, Adam?
I just saw the AI image that Pete posted. What AI tool do you guys use for those images? Because I swear, can they get some different looking white nerdy guys that aren't the real AFM guys? Like, no. I swear, every time. It's just, you know,
yep.
Mike Hurley and...
You're not wrong. I'm putting it up in the video here. Yeah, it looks like Mike Hurley
should,
in,
like, literally
different stages
sue at
of
this
beard,
point.
They're beard, like, length. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yep. It's, well, totally
I'm
right.
I'm working on my beard there since I'm off from work for a couple weeks.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. No, yeah. It was fixing your Apple Watch with a ball peen hammer and a scalpel.
I like it. Can you tell it to make that a wide aspect ratio? Wait, wide aspect ratio image?
I thought I did, but...
And if so, then I'll
easy
use
for
that.
You to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, ChatGPT wants everybody to look like Mike Hurley. I don't know. He's, you know, why not?
He's a good-looking guy.
Handsome guy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Make sure to check out our monthly giveaway at MacGeekUp.com/giveaway. We are giving away copies of... We partnered with Brett Terpstra to give away copies of Marked 2. So thanks to Brett for doing that with us. Make sure you go sign up for those. Our bandwidth, of course, is provided by Cashfly. You can check out Adam's other podcast, the Debut Film Podcast, Pete's other podcast, So There I Was, and my other shows, Business Brain and Gig Gab. Fun stuff all around. We just can't help it. We love being in front of the microphone, and we love that you choose to take your time and listen. So thanks to you. Share the show with a friend, please.
Do it now.
And Pete, what's your shirt say?
Teg Tanad. Oh, don't get caught.
Made on the back.
Yep. Later.